You're listening to The Chapman Cast, a podcast about religion and life.
Welcome to The Chapman Cast. My name is Pierce, and today I'm joined again by Malcolm and Coleman. Coleman, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. I've had a great week down here visiting my family, and I'm excited to go back up to Canada.
And Malcolm?
I'm doing well as well. Having fun hanging out with you two guys.
Thanks. And I am also glad to be here. I'm looking forward to the Eagles game in about an hour and a half. But we're not here to talk about the Eagles, or are we? And that's what I wanted to ask Coleman. Coleman, you wrote your dissertation on remnants.
Pierce, are you saying you have remnants about the Eagles?
Yes, I think I do, but I don't know if I do, and that's why we've got Coleman here to ask. Coleman, what is a remnant?
Before I answer that, I'd just like to say I'm excited to see Cobb play. I want to see how he does. A remnant is, well, if you've grown up in the new church, or at least the general church, you've probably far more often heard people talk about remains. People say they have remains for a song that they loved in their childhood. They talk about great things that they experienced as kids, sort of as nostalgia. And that is part of this concept of a remnant, but the concept is much, much bigger than that. The concept comes from, especially the Old Testament, but it's a theme throughout the Word. There's a theme in the Old Testament, and it's over and over again. You see it especially in the prophets, that the children of Israel are carried away to captivity. They're being destroyed, but there's a promise that a remnant will return. There's a promise that some of them will survive. Some of them will come back and rebuild the country.
That was a question I had just on the literal sense. Are the remnant the people who have gone away and are coming back, or are they the people who've been left there?
More often than not, it's talking about the ones who have been carried away, because the promises are often phrased as a remnant will return.
So is a remnant the people that Ezekiel and Daniel are talking with and dealing with?
Yes, they would be some of the remnant, those who would survive through the years of captivity and come back to the land. It does also refer to the ones who were there. It's whoever would form that core nucleus that survived all the terrible wars and things like that and would rebuild the land.
If you're just going to tell us an internal sense, what does that mean, without getting into necessarily the details of the doctrine?
That's a hard question to answer, because I wrote my dissertation on this. Although, that was 2 years ago, so keep in mind that I'm doing this mostly from memory, and I'm glancing over at my dissertation as I do this. But, in general, the remnant represents the things in us that are the Lord's. That's the most basic definition. Anything that is the Lord's with you. And so, from the moment you're born, the Lord gives you feelings of love, states of love and innocence and goodness, and also truth you learn, everything you learn from the Lord. All those good things are a remnant. But we go through struggles, temptations, and things like that. We go through times where those don't feel present in our minds, and that's like they're being carried away. They're still stored up within us deeper. We don't feel them, but they come down into our minds as we need them. They return into our lives. If we're going through a hard time, right when we need it, the Lord will remind us of the feeling of love, and that's a remnant returning into our lives.
I think that answers one of my questions, is can we be conscious of our remnants, and how often are we? I've gotten the impression sometimes that they're mostly stored away, protected somewhere where we can't really get to them. But is that the case, or can we experience them consciously?
To answer that, you have to get a little bit more detailed, because the general concept of them is everything that is the Lord's with you. Well, can you experience things that are the Lord's with you? I certainly hope so. So yes, you can experience them. But it also talks about sort of the deepest remnants, and this is where this concept comes from, that they're the feelings we have associated with childhood things. The deepest remnants are the ones we have when we're little children, our states of innocence as we play with other children or as we rely on our parents. And those ones are stored up deep within us, and I think, and this is where I'm not entirely sure, but that those do mostly remain hidden, and we don't actually experience them consciously unless we come into a celestial state where we're sort of at the state of the highest angels.
Can we have new remnant states? Can I enter a new state of innocence temporarily where the Lord can leave something in me again.
Definitely. And that's maybe a misconception that a lot of people have, is that remnants are something you get in childhood and then you stop getting. You get remnants throughout your life. Now, the ones you get later on in life, they're not the same deep celestial remnants, but they're more remnants of truth. Every time you learn something, you're getting a remnant.
Well, then let me go back to the Eagles. For me, when I think of the Eagles, one of the first things that comes to mind is sitting in my father's lap watching the Eagles on a Sunday afternoon. And the sense of security and peace and joy, I'm wondering if the Eagles are a natural container for that state of innocence that the Lord has given me.
I think it's possible that they are. I think they can at least trigger something. I get nervous about saying I have remnants for, say, my favorite song that we sing in church, because that sort of makes the song to be something holy almost. Like, you can't change that. I have remnants for it. Remnants are spiritual things. Natural things might trigger them, but they're not actually that closely tied to the natural thing as far as I understand the teaching.
Yeah, because otherwise, I mean, you could say any association you have, you could call a remnant in some ways. But it seems like it's a little bit more specific than that.
So it's more like the affection for a fatherly authority figure and the recognition of the truth that I have a heavenly father. That is more of a remnant. And it's given form, perhaps, by my natural memory of sitting with my father watching the Eagles. So that now when I think of the Eagles, the Lord can use that to remind me that I have a heavenly father and that I'm safe and loved.
Right, exactly. That's how I look at it. With natural things do prompt remnants to come to our mind, or at least feelings that the remnants inspire. If these remnants are these deep celestial things, it's not actually the remnants themselves that we're experiencing. It's some kind of affection that comes from them. More often, they're talked about as coming back during times of temptation, times when we're going through struggles, and also after temptation. Temptation sort of makes it so that it's safe for them to return, so we don't mess up those feelings of innocence. The Lord lets them come back down into our lives when he knows that we're actually able to hold them in ourselves.
But that's like in the prophets, the description of all those wars and destruction of the Ammonites and all these different people. That's the temptation that we go through.
Right, exactly, where they're sort of protected while we go through temptations. But they also do come down during temptations, and they're what the angels stir in us to fight against hell. So let's say you're struggling with some feeling of lust or something. You have these feelings of lust on one side, but what the angels are going to stir on the other side is some remnant you have associated with a love for marriage. That's what they will use, something that's been implanted in you from not just when you were a little child, it's also all the things you know about it. They will stir up these good loves that have been implanted and sort of stored away.
Yeah, and I think that gets to why these things are so important. I remember somebody was saying that remnants are a key concept that other Christian churches don't have, because it helps explain how we can be nothing but evil and on our own unsavable, but when you understand that there are things stored away in us that are from the Lord, then those are incorruptible. Personally, I find that a very helpful concept when I'm struggling with something, to know, okay, in my conscious mind right now is just total junk, but that is not the complete nature of my reality. I know that there are things in me which I can't mess with that are good and from the Lord and heavenly, and be able to draw on that, the strength of that knowledge is really helpful.
Yeah, that's a great point. The teachings about remnants are a great sort of counterbalance to the truth that of ourselves, we're nothing but evil, because they are the things that are the Lord's with us. We all have these things. There's some great passages, and it doesn't actually use the term remnants, but it talks about the fact that from the moment we're born, our new will starts being formed. That innocence we have as newborns is the beginning of our new will. So it's not like we grow up as children and we have nothing but this corrupt old will. From the beginning, as those remnants are being formed and stored up, our new will, our heavenly will, is being developed. And I like that way of thinking about it. The important thing, though, is to keep in mind that remnants don't belong to us. They're all the Lord. The second day of creation is where the waters above were separated from the waters below. And that's actually the first time the writings use the word remnants is in describing the internal sense of that story. And it's talking about the things that are our own being separated from the things that are the Lord's. That separation in our minds, that we do have these good things in us. They've been with us from infancy, but they don't belong to us.
Well, let me ask you about marriage, since you used it as an example. I've heard that one of the reasons why we should celebrate a wedding and go on a honeymoon is because it gives you something to think about and remember throughout the rest of your marriage, that you can always return and think back to your marriage and your honeymoon and think, I was in love with her. It may have been a shallow, young love, but I did love her. And so that in those times where you're really angry at your wife, or if you're in a moment of temptation, of lust, you can return to that. And I even heard at, I think it was Malcolm's wedding, someone said that you can look at your wedding ring and be reminded of those things.
I would say that is a remnant. And again, partly just because that sometimes has such a general meaning, but they're often described as every state of good and truth in your life. So that state of goodness, that state of love, is a remnant. And if it comes back, then that's a remnant returning. There's a great passage, I can't remember it, if I can find it, I'll have it posted on the website, that says that every temptation that you go through, and the writings use temptation to mean time of struggle, not just you want to do something bad, but before every temptation, a person is in a state of peace, and it's that state of peace that's in them inwardly that allows them to get through temptation. So there's always this good thing, this good state that you go through that lets you get through the harder states of temptation.
It's almost the contrast that we long for. Like, if we didn't have some sense of things could be better, I could not be in this state. I could be more peaceful. I could be more happy. I could be less lustful. Why would we want to struggle? There would be nothing to struggle for.
If you guys don't mind sharing, what are some natural things that you can remember that trigger for you a suspicion of remnants? Like, oh, wait, I think there's the Lord in this.
It's nothing very specific, but babies and children. I got to spend Christmas Day with a little 3-year-old boy who was opening his presents and loved them and was giving his parents hugs and gave me a hug. And being around that atmosphere of little children really stirs something in me. The book Conjugal Love does say that the innocence of children inspires innocence in people who have innocence. That's a very real experience of it.
I think that's one of the joys of being a parent. Being an uncle, I can see that. Even silly things like Halloween. Halloween is a kid's holiday. It's no fun as an adult. But as a kid, you get to go around and run around and get candy. But as an adult, you get to watch the kid do that. And I think that's just so much fun.
What Coleman said really resonates with me, especially with having a 5-month-old daughter. It's interesting, too, how it's you go out to restaurants or whatever else, and it changes people's reaction to you. People smile naturally when they see a little baby. There's something really cool going on there where the Lord is very obviously working through just a little person smiling at them with chubby cheeks.
I think we can all agree that babies are wonderful and that they bring a sphere of the Lord with them. Thank you guys for joining us on another episode of the Chapman Cast. And thank you listeners too. If you have things that you remember that help bring up states of innocence and peace in you or affections for truth, let us know through the comments section of the website. And thank you for joining us on another episode of the Chapman Cast.
Content on the Chapman Cast is owned by its hosts and interview guests. Find us online at newchurchperspective.com/ChapmanCast. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and tell your friends. We welcome your feedback in the comments section of the website. Thank you for listening.